Salim Haddad's debut novel, Guapa, tells the story of Rasa, a young gay man coming of age in the Middle East. Set over the course of 24 hours, Guapa follows Rasa, a gay man living in an unnamed Arab country, as he tries to carve out a life for himself in the midst of political and social upheaval. Rasa spends his days translating for Western journalists and pining for the nights when he can sneak his lover, Timur, into his home. As Rasa confronts the simultaneous collapse of political hope and his closest personal relationships, he is forced to discover the roots of his alienation and try to reemerge into a society that may never accept him. Salim Haddad was born in Kuwait City in 1983 to a Lebanese-Palestinian father and an Iraqi-German mother, and educated in Jordan, Canada, and the United Kingdom. He has worked as an aid worker with Doctors Without Borders in Yemen, Syria, and Iraq, and currently lives in London. Again, the name of the new novel is Guapa, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Salim Haddad to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
I suppose when you write a novel like this, that obviously you want to tell a story, but you're also trying to present a voice that, at least in my mind, has been missing in contemporary fiction.
Completely. When I, growing up as someone who's gay and Arab, I never really could see myself represented in any dominant narratives, whether English or Arabic. In a lot of Arabic media and culture, gay people are demonized. They're presented as sort of a sign of civilizational or moral decay. But also in Western media and culture, representations of Arabs are often also demonized as well. And so growing up, I often had to make do with picking elements of different stories from my favorite English and Arabic television shows and movies to try and piece together my identity. So writing this novel was a way for me to basically tell a story that felt representative and authentic to me that I didn't really see represented anywhere.
Guapa, we should mention, it's a bar, right?
Guapa's a bar. It's a bar in this country. It's where a lot of outcasts and activists hang out. And these sorts of bars and coffee shops exist everywhere in the Middle East. And I've always found them to be very politically important places for young people to congregate, because for many young people in the region, you don't leave your parents' house until you get married. And so you don't really have a space where you can be yourself. So these coffee shops and bars become a space where a lot of these young people can organize and discuss controversial issues like politics and sex. And it's a way for them to be themselves. So for me, Guapa is the centerpiece of the novel, because it's the place where Rasa feels he can be himself.
And know that Rasa is gay.
Exactly.
And he can express that there.
To a certain degree. I mean, I think, and throughout the book, Rasa is coming to terms with how he understands his sexual identity and whether he even feels that the word gay fits for his own particular circumstances. But to a certain degree, Guapa, for him, represents a place where he does not need to question these things that much. He can just exist and be himself.
I'm hoping that you will read a part of the novel from the early part of the novel. And then you can set it up, and then we'll talk more about what comes after.
So this is from the very beginning of the novel. It's when Rasa wakes up in the morning after his grandmother has caught him in bed with Timur, who's his boyfriend. The morning begins with shame. This is not new, but as memories of last night begin to sink in, the feeling takes on a terrifying resonance. I grimace, squirm, dig my fingers in my palms until the pain in my hands reflects how I feel. But there is no controlling what Teta saw, and her absence from my bedside means that she doesn't intend, as she had promised, to file away last night's mess in a deep corner of her mind. On any other morning, my grandmother's voice, hoarse from a million smoked cigarettes, would pierce my dreams. Yalla Rasa, yalla Habibi. She would hover over me, her cigarette by my lips. I would inhale, feel the smoke travel to my lungs, jolting my insides awake. On any other morning, Doris would be beside her, pulling up the shutters in my room in a quick and violent snap, removing a bandage to ease the pain of sunlight. One final yalla, then Teta would pull the sheets away and toss them aside. She took particular joy in doing this on cold winter mornings, relishing the way my skin broke out in goosebumps as I leaped across the room to snatch the blanket. This is not how I wake up this morning. Getting up today involves battling demons more powerful than sloth. There is everything that has ever happened, and then there is this morning. I've crossed the red line with Teta. My mobile rings. I roll over in bed and pick it up. "Where are you?" Besma barks. "You should have been here 20 minutes ago. I've got to meet a South African journalist who wants to interview some female refugees and the office is empty." I clear my throat and rub my eyes. "Besma, I'm sorry." "Don't be sorry. Be at the office. And I suppose I'm your ride to the wedding tonight, yes?" "The wedding. The wedding, the wedding, the wedding." "Yes?" Besma asks again. "I'm not feeling well," I croak. "I don't think I should go." "I'll pick you up at 8. I put the phone down and reach for my cigarettes. The cigarette will stimulate my brain. Thoughts will begin moving. I light one and inhale. My throat is raw from last night's pleading, and the smoke burns as it makes its way down. "I thought you were doing drugs. It didn't even cross my mind. I had woken up a few times already, but the air still felt heavy. I wasn't ready to leave my dreams, so I plunged my face in the pillow and willed myself to sleep. After 3 or 4 or 1,000 times, I could not do it anymore. My eyes were shut, but my brain was wide awake. So here we are. I have no choice now but to face whatever the day may throw at me."
Salim Haddad reading from the new novel Guapa, published by Other Press. You mentioned the 24 hours. So you have that very defined period of time in the novel. Was that always your intention, or did that come somewhere in the process?
My initial intention was to write this sweeping love story that would span 10 years. And I really wanted it to speak to the experience of Arab youth my age, who are sort of in their late 20s or early 30s, whose identity was formed in the wake of 9/11 and the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and also by the Arab Spring. And I wanted to map out this gay love story. But as I wrote, I realized that it lacked the intensity that I needed. And I thought that I wanted to challenge myself into thinking, is there a way that I could cover all the issues that I want to be discussing in a span of 24 hours? And I realized there is. So that's what I ended up doing.
The idea of it being an unnamed Arab country, why that decision?
I think there are many decisions. There are both practical decisions and, I guess, more literary decisions. From a story perspective, I liked the metaphorical aspect. It gave me the freedom to really draw parallels between this idea of a political revolution and a sexual coming out of the closet, coming of age story. And so it allowed me the freedom to really explore these different dynamics. I grew up in a lot of different countries in the Middle East, and I've worked on and in many different countries. So I was able to draw from all of these different countries to create this Arab country that is similar to a lot of different countries, but also different. And I felt metaphorically it would work well because it represents Rasa's own struggle with defining himself and oftentimes his refusal to fit into prescribed notions of how to be gay or how to be Arab or how to be a good son. And from a practical perspective, I think I wanted to talk about queer lives in the Arab world and queer experiences in the Arab world, but I wanted to do so without exposing practical elements and in order to protect individuals and places and communities. And this was a way for me to do that, also drawing on different queer communities across the region.
What I found surprising was the number and the strength of those communities. Do you think that would surprise most Western readers?
I think so. And that's partly why I wanted to write the story. I wanted to show that, you know, life for gay Arabs can be very difficult, but it can also be very beautiful and wonderful. And there are heartbreaking moments, but there are also amazingly beautiful moments. And I wanted to try and capture that in the book. And I think this book is not seeking to represent anything or anyone. You know, it's one of the only way I could write this book was to absolve myself of the need to speak on behalf of any community, whether it's Arab or queer. And so I see this book as just one story among a kaleidoscope of different and diverse queer Arab experiences.
you address this in the book, but I'm curious as to, so what was coming out for you like? At what age?
It was this very slow process, and it was a very complicated process. And I remember growing up in Jordan and thinking that it was a death sentence. First of all, I didn't really have the right word to use. I just had these feelings, and I had come across the word gay, you know, on television sometimes. But even in the 90s, you know, even in the U.S., you know, gay representation in television and movies wasn't really anywhere near as prolific as it is now. So in the Middle East, even when I was watching these television movie shows, I rarely came across gay characters. And then when I studied in Canada, so I graduated from high school and went to Canada, and that was in September of 2001. And so that, in my mind, was a way for me to explore that side of myself and explore my sexuality. And about 3 weeks later, September 11th happened, and I realized that they had this whole other identity I didn't even know existed, which was this Arab identity. You know, growing up in the Middle East, everyone is Arab, so you don't, mm-hmm. you take that identity for granted. And I understood myself in a completely different way. So even in Canada, a place where, you know, in terms of my sexuality, in theory, I should have been able to explore it, I found myself really wanting to understand my Arab identity. So ironically, it wasn't until I returned back to the Middle East and I found places like Guapa and I met different gay people that I began to really start to come out to myself.
You live in London, as I mentioned in the introduction, but when you go back to the Middle East, is it you can be yourself?
Not entirely, no. And it's a game that you play, and it's about knowing the codes in different countries and knowing what is and isn't acceptable. But it's hard. Even though I'm out to my parents and I'm out to my group of friends, there still remains, you know, anyone on the street can ask you, you sit in a taxi and they'll ask you if you're married and they'll want to talk to you about marriage. And so it's a constant game that you play between what you reveal and what you don't. And even with friends of mine who might be quite conservative and they might not necessarily want to know, they won't broach the subject with me. And so you have to dance around it. So it's a game. You can't really be yourself. But I feel like there's movement. You know, a friend of mine who lives in the West Bank has told me that he has started to come out to random people on the street. So instead of just coming out to his family and his friends, if someone asks him, you know, if his barber asks him, are you married? He will say, no, I'm gay. Just to normalize that. So I think people are starting to challenge this, but it's still in the very early stages in terms of, you know, the public discourse around homosexuality.
This book is very much around the Arab Spring. And again, it's a 24-hour snapshot, but what were you able to explore in that limited time frame to look at the impact of that and the continuing impact of that?
I wrote this book while I was working for an NGO that was doing a lot of work around peace processes and transitional processes in the wake of the Arab Spring. So I was traveling a lot to Yemen and Egypt and Libya specifically and doing a lot of work on Syria. Obviously, we couldn't travel there. And so I was meeting with youth activists and women activists and being Arab myself and being completely drawn into the protests and feeling so much hope, I really wanted to write about this hope. And in many ways, that hope was the initial drive to write the novel because I felt that I could make my voice heard and I wanted to make my voice heard in some way. But as, you know, the years progressed since 2011, the situation got very complicated. And writing this book and exploring some of the political issues and the political dynamics in this book was a way for me to try and understand how things had soured, what was driving the fear that seemed to have returned to many of those places.
I do want to address the work that you do, aid work and helping others in other countries. Does that hinder when you go to other places of still being who you are and helping others? Or does it in some way open up dialogue?
My sexuality.
Hmm.
It's a bit of both, and it really depends. And you know, I started doing aid work because there was a part of me that wanted to explore the world and a part of me that wanted to do good in the world in a very idealistic way. But I would be lying if I said there wasn't also a part of me that ran to aid work to run away from myself, because going to somewhere like the tribal lands in Yemen is the perfect way to escape when you have, you know, when you're struggling with your own identity. And at some point, and in a place like Yemen, I was in working in a refugee camp in southern Yemen in 2008. And at some point I realized I was in the closet, obviously, and I realized I could not do this anymore for this length of time that I was doing it in, because I just realized that I needed to live more authentically. And the aid work since then has been a lot more short term, so going in for short visits. And in those short visits, I've started to have discussions with people, especially when I was writing the book and people would ask what the book was about, and I would honestly tell them. I was very surprised, you know, even in places like Libya and Yemen, which you would imagine would be very conservative, the book sparked a very interesting discussion. And, you know, I was speaking with this woman activist in Yemen. She's from the conservative tribal areas. And I was just so shocked because I realized that I had placed my own stereotypes on her, and I was trying to protect her from the knowledge of my sexuality. And actually, once I stopped doing that, I realized she was very eager to learn more and she wanted to talk about her own challenges. And so I think there's room to build bridges, but it's not easy.
So with that said, how much of you wants to identify yourself more as a writer?
I do see myself as a writer. I think even in my aid work, I draw inspiration from my aid work, but I don't think I could write full time. For me, my aid work is a way for me to connect with communities, to connect with people and different lives. And so I feel like I gain purpose from my writing and I gain a different sort of purpose from my aid work. And as much as possible, I'd like to do both at the same time.
Nothing stopping you from doing that.
Time and getting older.
Yeah, is that that's a young man's game, isn't it?
It's true, it is. And you know, when you're young, you feel like you have less to lose. And so you're willing to take more risks. And then as you get older, I guess I don't know what it is, whether it's falling in love or, you know, or realizing the importance of family and, you know, the risks that you're willing to take, they're less and less as you get older. And I've definitely felt that as well.
And I assume that there are ways to feel that giving and that assistance and that aid that you give others that can be found in other outlets.
Absolutely. And writing is one of them.
Well, the name of the new novel is Guapa. It is published by Other Press. Salim Haddad, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you so much for sharing with us this morning.
Thank you.
Great pleasure. Again, the name of the novel is Guapa. It is published by Other Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.